stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the accounts payable sheet, and that would be manual check for payroll, and it'd be $708.68, and the taxes associated with that. Total warrants approved for the week, $826.10, noting that we may need to have a spring break more often.
Second.
I imagine there are no items of note.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yesterday's work session was also very brief. We had an update from the county manager, and that was about it. So I will
great.
Second Commissioner Monger's vote for more often spring break.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve consent agenda items A, B, and C.
Second.
Is there a resolution that needs to be?
A resolution and the plat.
Okay. So is this like a normal resolution? Does it go on this list?
Yeah,
it does. Okay. And so the resolution number on that is 13. So we'll just note that in the motion.
13, you said?
Yep.
013.
Okay, any other discussion?
So that's part of Commissioner Corbin's
yes.
Yeah, motion. Did you get that? So part of my motion.
Part of my second as well.
Part of his
good catch. Thank you.
All right, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right.
Yes. So we are looking at a temporary construction easement for the City of Steamboat Springs Butcher Knife Floodplain Improvement Project.
Thank you. Yes, hopefully you remember back on the 2nd of April, city staff was in here advising you of several projects that they have going on that will affect us. And one of them is the project on Butcher Knife Creek, where they will be fixing the drainage under Oak Street, as well as across down Dry Creek, Butcher Knife Creek, that travels across county property. They are going to be working on county property to do some of that construction, so they have requested a construction easement to be able to do that project. The project is scheduled for 2020. Some of it might start this year, depending upon when they have received grant funding for it, but they will be moving the project forward. However, this easement gives them through November 1 of 2020 for their easement. County attorney has reviewed this easement agreement, and he is okay with it.
Any questions?
Madam Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on the temporary construction easement with the City of Steamboat Springs regarding the Butcher Knife Floodplain Improvement Project and that temporary easement.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Me too.
I'm done with the winter.
This is my spring, my favorite springtime sweater.
I'm done with winter, Tim. I didn't say winter was
it's
done
like
with
me. It's like an internal state of being. Okay.
Thank you. Yes, that's correct.
Whole change in framework.
That's right. Mindset.
All right, so we are looking at an approval to hire the new HR generalist and benefits administrator at step 4 of the pay scale.
Yes, please. So I would, I'm interested in hiring Tennille Connor at step four of the HR generalist pay scale. This position is an existing position, and she is coming in to fill it. So, and it has been budgeted, and she is, she meets all the educational and work experience to be hired at step four. She has a Bachelor of Science and approximately 10 years of relevant experience, which is 7 years above the minimum requirement for the job description. And her education also allows her to go up in a step because a college degree is not required for the position.
I always have to ask this question every time. What's your authority to approve?
My authority is up to step three.
Step three.
Yeah,
so anything above step three, we have to approve.
Right.
Okay.
And the county manager has reviewed this and has recommended that it be placed on the agenda for your consideration for approval.
I don't have any questions. Do you have
ready.
Any questions?
I have no.
Ready for
okay.
the motion.
I think we're ready.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve the hire of the new HR generalist benefits administrator at step four of the pay scale.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Cool. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. How's it going?
You can
good
to
see you. See you. Yeah, okay, come sit up here.
Doctor,
thank you.
Hello, John.
Nice to meet you.
How are you?
Good. Nice to meet you. Good to see you again.
See you again.
We met in leadership.
Awesome.
I'm in leadership.
Leadership. Yeah.
Did you guys take on a project?
Yes.
What's your project?
Yeah. So our project is it's coffee cart. So
wait a minute. Start with these guys, or should this be on the record?
Yeah.
Was this part of what you were doing?
Yeah, no. But
no, we're talking about leadership.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're just chatting.
Yeah. So
I don't think it's confidential.
It's coffee. It's called Coffee Cart. It's a wellness project for younger folks in the area, but we're starting it.
It's a cool project
with a leadership class at Steamboat Springs High School. So they take the coffee cart into classes, and they ask basically a lot of coffee stuff of their feelings and ask how they're doing. And the actual leadership class is running it in kind of a peer-to-peer class, but it's exciting.
This is more of the mental health problems rather
yes.
than physical health.
Yeah.
Coffee is not a wellness factor.
I don't know about that. But what's neat is it's been picked up by the Front Range, and they have plans on working with us to make it a state demonstration project and potentially.
Yeah, it was Poudre Valley High School, I think.
Yeah,
heard about it. Yeah.
Well,
who started
Highlands Ranch? Highlands Ranch started it.
Okay.
And they still run it, and now Poudre School District is taking it up and putting it in theirs as well. So it's cool.
What do you think the potential of it continuing after you guys are done is? Does it need
pretty high partners? Is
okay.
Michelle is gonna. Wants to take it over and run it through there. It seems like
I can't imagine it costs a lot, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, we've raised enough funds to run it for a couple of years.
So, this has really been this ongoing conversation that we've had about a lot of the issues that are out there in terms of substance abuse programs, public health programs, and one of our friends. I don't want to put this on you. Just letting you know. One of our frustrations is that we see all these nonprofits and all these organizations implementing these strategies, but nobody seems to be able to come up with a way to come back and tell us whether or not they've had success. Beyond the fact they'll say, we contacted X number of people, we provided these services, we did this educational outreach, but the question is, did anybody get better? Right? And I know that's a tough one. You may not be able to do that, but...
Well, with it, if it moves to the state demonstration project, that's going to be the number one.
Yeah.
That's really what takes us to the next level. Why we're excited.
So,
what does that mean, the state demonstration project? Who does that?
So that's that really that works with the state.
Okay.
And like so I guess there's
is it a
I'm not
education.
Sure. Education,
I mean,
or is
that's
it?
Where
it would be. I know that they're that the doctor that contacted me.
Uh-huh.
She has direct contact with Governor Polis, and he's big in the mental health area. So when you get to a state demonstration project, and once you start gathering data, if over a course of a couple of years. You can gather the data that this actually helps. It becomes an example for other states to take on. So it can become national.
What did you call the program?
We call it Coffee Card.
Coffee Card.
I'm saying.
Well, as long as you have a few other kids with a little bit of caffeine, keep them away. Sure.
Caffeine.
I mean, we also
caffeine and sugar instead of
hot chocolate and some other stuff on there.
That would be dangerous.
You're right. Caffeine. You know, really, it's a good thing.
It's concerns about you now.
So
these kids will be able to report their feelings.
You ready to start the update?
Absolutely. We do training with partners. You know, if someone says something that you know one of the kids thinks that they could be a danger to themselves or others, we have to report it. Yeah, and they have a debrief, and there's a lot built into it. It's a really neat program.
Well, that sounds good. You know, one of the things that I've been complaining about for a while now is school security. Mm-hmm. How much money we spend trying to harm the schools and put people up in class. Security locks and systems and all that business, and I think what you're talking about doing will contribute more than any amount of hardening of the schools to provide student safety. Yeah, that sounds great.
I think so.
And they toured the power plant this year rather than the mine in the past. The program is toured the mine, but somebody got mouthy last year apparently. That's what I heard. Is that what you guys heard?
Yeah.
Mouthy at the power plant?
No, at the mine.
That's a bad
place
to get mouthy.
Yeah, those kids. And now they come back up. Well, we went up with 30 times. I know we started with 40.
Yeah, it wasn't the best situation, so it didn't build on the relationship as we wanted, so we went back to try and correct that, and then said, why don't we take a break, and how about we tour the power plant?
And everybody was nice at the power plant?
Power plant. Okay. So.
Nobody's rude to them.
Always a problem when you're dealing with human beings.
Yeah, there's
not letters
there.
So we can go ahead and get started.
Yeah, that's
If you guys want to introduce yourselves for the record, and we'll have this is our quarterly, is that right?
Quarterly update. We
okay,
do a quarterly
from
update.
The economic
so this is Q1 update. John Bristol from the Steamboat Chamber, Economic Development Director, and I brought
Vic Walker, I'm the Membership Manager, Steamboat Chamber.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, update us.
Yeah, so...
Oh, sorry, do you want to ask questions at the end, or do you want
we
to be
can,
interrupted
you know,
for questions?
I am happy being interrupted as we go through.
Okay.
Just pepper it, so...
Sounds good.
As we go through, as things pop in your heads, let's do that. Page one isn't any different than what you saw last year, so we just kind of keep with that. Just a reminder, these are our 10 steps. It all starts with the investors, and that's the process flow that we got here. But jumping over to page two... I do want to miss the opportunity to say thank you for approving our budget request last year for this year. I certainly appreciate that. The city did as well, and of course with the chamber and presented to the Chamber on Economic Development this month, gave them a full overview of what we're doing and working on. Jumping down to the EDC, you can see the three meetings that we had this quarter. This month we'll be talking about metrics and high-performing EDOs. I really want to move the Economic Development Council, as well as myself, to more specific metrics in what we're doing. So I've done some research, identified a really good report that's got basic metrics for economic development organizations. It's a nice menu. I want the EDC to work through this so that they can set specific goals on economic development, which then feed into the goals that I'm setting for myself. So that's a kind of a project that we're working on this year. So let's see, our subcommittees for the EDC got various projects. Business development's the cornerstone of all of it. Last year they worked on business retention and expansion project. You know, we're building this economic development program. This year they're focused on the industry cluster strategy and identified those four clusters to focus on: ag, creative industries, outdoor products, and location neutral business employees. Commissioner Milton, certainly appreciate you jumping on that committee.
Absolutely.
And providing insights there. I think that's really helpful. The Education and Communication Committee is really focused on marketing and communication as well as economic summit for this next year. So we don't have a theme or speakers or sponsors yet, but we're going to be working on that. So
when is that usually? In October?
It's Friday, October 19th.
You'll have a hard time topping last year's.
Last year was really good.
Yeah,
it was that was a fun one. I really enjoyed putting that together, and we had a good lineup.
I've seen Sarah Schrader speak again.
Oh, you have?
She's just good.
Well, and what's great about her in specific, and this goes further, jumping around here a little bit, specific to outdoor rec and gear manufacturers, having somebody like that in the community that is willing to be the leader and the spokesman for that kind of sector and that cluster is critical. We don't really have that person identified yet here, and I'd really like to find that person. That would be really, really helping with some of our work.
Yeah, she gave the was it Club 20 a couple mm-hmm. months ago.
Oh, okay.
She gave an update on that plan that Grand Junction is executing
right.
down on the riverfront, with
yeah.
them being kind of the anchor
yeah.
tenant, for lack of a better word. But Grand Junction is really kind of moving and shaking on that front.
They are. Both them and Montrose, you know, they've really invested in that. It's jumping back up to the Business Development Committee, talking about industry cluster and industry cluster strategy. You know, this is a proven strategy for economic development. You think of Silicon Valley, you know, think of Houston, think of Detroit. It's communities that have thoughtfully invested in developing certain industries. Grand Junction, obviously, is thinking about that. They're thinking about outdoor rec. You see that in Montrose as well. It naturally fits for here, certainly for Steamboat and Round County. When we've got 10 to 15 outdoor rec companies that are already located here, that's a high concentration. Most of them are in the Denver-Boulder area, but outside of that, it's really here. You know, those are high-paying jobs. So being thoughtful about how we can organize that group a little bit more and engage them is key. I certainly think that there's some opportunities. You don't have to go as far as developing industrial parks like Grand Junction's done. There's other ways to do it. So,
how about the creative industries side of the equation?
Sure, creative industry side of the equation is interesting. This is interesting. So I'm on the board of the Arts Council, Steamboat Creates, and they are evolving into more of an umbrella organization supporting all creative industries. You know, that can include web page designers, architects. It's not just necessarily the fine arts that you think about in a gallery. And so really encompassing all of the creative industries, those tend to be those that are exporting their products outside of the county, tend to have higher than average annual wages. And so having an organization evolve like Steamboat Creates into a broader umbrella organization that's supporting and kind of aligning all of these efforts is a smart way to go. And I've spent a lot of time with Steamboat Creates, with Kim and Matt on this, just talking around economic development and what that looks like in the creative industries. That obviously with Steamboat was a key component in the Creative Arts District. That's kind of been the impetus to this, which, as you know, Jane worked on. So
did the Creative Arts District, that was something that was going to be, assistance was coming from the state to support that?
Sure.
So did that actually happen?
Yes.
Okay.
So
Steamboat got that designation.
Yeah. So they applied. They didn't get it. But the second time around, they did get it, and that was
okay.
last year. And so that is really the idea through Colorado Creative Industries, which is a department of the Office of Economic Development.
Mm-hmm.
That, it again, it's this idea of organizing specific clusters to
be much more thoughtful on how they are supporting the business community. And this one's very specific to the creative industries themselves.
So are they, they're getting real support from the state? Or?
They are, yeah. And there's grant funding out there, as well as marketing support for that, so as well as technical assistance, so, which they are getting.
Great, thank you.
That's kind of a side little tangent there, but I think it's a key area where certainly the Economic Development Council, when they've identified these key clusters to support, that's one. So, strategic partners, you can kind of read through the update there. I would say that the top one of most interest here is the Coal Relying Communities Challenge. I've been working with Commissioner Melton on this. As well as NACO is supporting in support with USEDA. That's coming up on May 3rd. We submitted an application to them to have a team to go and participate in that. I know that we've participated in that in the past, but this I think is a good opportunity specifically for Hayden to have more of a Hayden-focused group participating in it. So,
and NACO's covering all the costs.
That's correct. NACO just through FYI. This grant through the USEDA. So.
Sounds good. That's what we pay our dues. My
God. So pay your dues for, and also USEDA is funding with a grant, so we're able to apply for that and get that, which is great.
That's great.
So get clarification on that. And that includes lodging and mileage for it, and foods included.
Where's it at?
Program. It'll be in Denver.
In Denver.
May 1, 2, and 3.
Well, I appreciate Commissioner Melton taking it on. I think that Commissioner Mauger and myself went through the same process several years ago. And
right.
It's possible that we didn't have the best of attitudes maybe going in.
I can't imagine.
Well, you know, actually, what John has indicated to me is that sometimes it's easier to do this kind of work the closer you are to a crisis point, which is not...
And we weren't there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun, but that often it's easier to really do the work.
The big point that we got, the takeaway we got, we were already so far ahead of everybody else. We were already doing the things that they were suggesting. It's like, okay, so I guess we should give them a class.
which there's value in that, right? I think there's value in that as well.
I think Beth is right, too, because the other counties and people that were there were at the crisis point.
Mm-hmm.
And to us, it was still more of a vague concept.
Right. Well, and I think, I think specifically for this one, the tax of having town manager, city manager, economic development, as well as the Hayden Economic Development Council appointee, and Bonnie there as well. I think that's a good group. So to be there and to be thinking about this, you know, and to be able to identify, you know, where we are at in comparison to other communities that face this. So should be a good opportunity. You can read through kind of the updates here with OEdit. Nothing too new. There are some staff changes there that I'm trying to keep up with. The Blueprint 2.0 project has been rebranded as the Rural Technical Assistant Program now that it's new administration. The bullet points down there are the initiatives that they have for this year. We've applied for multiple ones of these and received them in the past. I think that this year I'm leaning towards the Grow Your Outdoor Recreation Industry Initiative, which is the second from the bottom one. I applied for that before, but I was asking for too much, and they said it just wasn't possible for them to provide that.
So where it says previously awarded, these are things that have been awarded
here specifically? Sure, yes. We were awarded a tiny homes, which kind of started the conversation around tiny homes that happened a couple years ago, as well as the Incubator and Accelerator Project, the Data Project, and the Film Festival Initiative Project. We've been awarded. We've gone after.
So. Did we have a film festival?
No, we don't. This is actually a project that's underway right now. We applied for that last year. Right now, the committee has decided to do a soft launch of a film festival this fall, and then a full film festival next year. They're in the, right now at the stage of figuring out what is the name of it and what is kind of their focus area. So, AG&C, I think most of you guys, most of the commission is aware of this. Northwest Cog, I will point out here that they're having an economic summit in Silverthorne on Friday, May 3rd. I'm not going to attend.
I think I'm going to that.
You asked Helena to sign you up. Yep. I saw the email.
Yep. Fantastic. They had asked me to speak at that, but the Coal Reliant Communities events came up, so I wasn't able to participate in it. But I just want to encourage attendance, if possible. They'll have some good speakers there. As well as I wanted to note the annual conference for the Economic Development Council of Colorado. It will be October 9th through 11th. This is a really good opportunity if you're interested in really kind of broad array of economic development activities happening across the state, what's happening.
So that economic summit is, it actually starts on Thursday, May 2nd. My calendar, I've got it for May 2nd.
I may have that wrong. Maybe it is May 2nd. Actually, I think you're right. It is Thursday, May 2nd.
Okay.
Not Friday.
Okay.
You're right.
What's going on? Correct. Fine.
Let's jump into some of the activities here. You can read through the rest of the items there. Top activity that has been occupying a lot of time, obviously, is the Rural Economic Advancement of Colorado Towns, the REACT Act work, which relates to Smart Wool. You know the timeline I listed there, just as a reminder of where we are and what we've done. And then...
Who replaced Luis?
I just exchanged emails with him last week to get him up here. His...
That's all right.
Director Fay, I don't know his first name.
I'm thrilled that I knew young age and dropped names.
We exchanged emails last week because I want to get him up here to meet with all our outdoor rec business owners. So hoping to do that either sometime in the next couple of months. Anyways, this is the activities that have happened and where we're at this point in time, and as well as updates specifically on the offers of support through OEDA and DOLA. Those items 1 through 5 have been completed and finished. Ongoing projects there are 6, 7, and 8 that we're working through. And then the incomplete items, I'm spending more time on these ones. Trying to figure out exactly points of contacts on each one and how to move the ball forward on some of them. Some of them have been a little bit slower than I expected. So
I have a question on this.
Yeah.
There was a lot of effort and energy put into getting Steamboat in the Rural Jumpstart Program.
Correct.
And so what's the follow-up to have that
great
lead
question.
To some actual economic activity?
Yeah, great question. We did. We spent a lot of time on that. I think that was one of our initial asks right afterwards because I saw that as something that was a reasonable ask. It would be a little bit difficult for the state EDC to approve, but they ultimately did. It was a good opportunity to get us into that. That now at this point, there's a couple pieces to it. One is marketing. So when there are folks that are looking to start a new business or looking to relocate here, making sure that those folks are aware of the Rural Jumpstart Program. Second piece, and so that means our website, ensuring that our website in the chamber, and hopefully need to have a conversation both with the city and the county as well as our other municipalities about putting that on their website or at least having some links on it, I think would be important.
Somewhere down the road here, we need to come up with any success projects on the Rural Jumpstart.
Right.
I know Mason County, Grand Junction maybe has two.
They have two, and we've got one in the pipeline right now. And so that's what I wanted
to say. And I know Matt had talked about maybe having one maybe at one point in time.
Yep.
So, and
we've
again, this all sounds really good, but somehow it's kind of going over the top of my head.
And
a lot of
this is the end of it. It's you go through all this work, but if we don't have anybody at the end of the day that actually utilizes
right.
it, great.
Yep.
We haven't done anything.
Refresh
so
my memory.
What are the benefits
to the employers?
No state taxes for the business and income tax for the business and the employees.
And then also the personal property tax
is
waived by the county as well.
without backfill from the state?
Yeah, it's waived.
It's supposedly not new personal properties.
New purple.
You're not missing anything.
But we do have...
It's all of it?
It's new personal property.
I think it is new personal property.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it has to be a
but
new business.
It isn't real property tax. It's all personal property.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all new. So investment is personal property tax free.
That's what's waived. Just personal property tax.
But then, yeah... Well,
no, I was just gonna, I just want to say, and so that's the key of it, is that we have to have folks in the pipeline coming through it. And so, Mesa County, I think, has had three or four, you know, in all these years that they've had it. We do have one company right now that has applied. They are in the pipeline, and we've got them on the agenda for the EDC, state EDC, next month, May 6th, Thursday. I think it's the 16th or 17th, so I'm going to go down there, and we'll be there in person. I won't have a role, but just as a show of how important it is that the EDC approved this company for the Rural Jumpstart Program for our county. So I'm really happy that this company has applied and potentially will be taking advantage of this. So we will ultimately have one so far, which is pretty darn quick.
Are they a company that's relocating? Or an existing company that's expanding?
No, it's a new company starting here. They are not competing with any other company that exists currently in Colorado.
Is there a receipt of the benefits of a Rural Jumpstart? Do they need that before they actually make the decision to pull the trigger?
This, I don't know if I can say that until after they've presented to the state EDC.
That's fine.
Just to be totally clear on that, because just since they have a pending application,
so fine.
I don't want to go too far into it. But it is good news that we've got a business in the pipeline there, so I'm really excited about that. Just a couple of side notes on that, with regards to the movement of SmartWool. It looks like they'll be moving in March of next year. It was looking at it like it was going to be the end of this year, so it looks more like it'll be March of next year. The question is just construction that's happening. So it could even be later than that. I did include a...
That's too bad. You're only going to be forcing them to stay at Steamboat until March.
Exactly.
And not have the opportunity to go live in Denver.
Go live in Denver. That's really
bad. You know, I feel real bad. So we're forcing them.
Almost all the way through the ski season.
I imagine there's a number of individuals that are really struggling with that decision to move or not.
They imposed a deadline on the employees to make a decision if they're staying with the company or if they're moving. Two times on that is obviously March 1st and January 1st are the two decision points for the employees. The employees in the company have already chosen those dates. I don't know what the percentage of, you know, what that is looks like. So a couple of side points. I did include an op-ed that I wrote for the Denver Post on this, because there is a larger issue around state tax credits going to a company that relocates jobs from rural Colorado to the metro area. I think that's a serious issue that the last administration faced and was very... I wanted to impress upon the next administration and appointees how important this issue is, and that there be a conversation about this down the road.
Absolutely. So, thank you.
Will you send us that op-ed?
That op-ed is attached at the end here.
Oh, you brought it.
Yeah.
Great.
And that op-ed ran on January 8th, which was Inauguration Day, so it was well-timed. Not to...
what a cute title.
Frustrate any folks in the previous administration as they walked out the door. But yet,
did you write the title?
I wrote all of this. So those
it's
are my
adorable. Thoughts,
so, thank you. So I think that's, it speaks for itself, kind of where I'm at. I also, City of Steamboat Springs asked for some insights on how to proceed with the airport office building. But,
I sat down with the city manager as well as the facilities director. I encouraged them. The city needs to make a decision on what they're doing with that facility, if they want to lease it as an entire unit or if they're willing to break it up to meet market demand. So that's the first question. That's a question that council's going to have to decide. So once they make that decision, if they want to divide it up, yeah, I think it'll be a little bit easier for them to move folks in there. If they're unwilling to divide it up and they want to lease it as a single unit, then the strategy that I recommended is that they're going to have to contract with a local broker as well as with a broker from probably the Front Range or National and have some sort of team that would be willing to work together to identify the business. And obviously, I would work with them. Film Fest, we talked about that. Report on makerspace commercial kitchen is completed. This is really around the idea of developing a makerspace, which is kind of that space for developing, you know, kind of like essentially it's a garage space, right, for outdoor rec companies, and then a commercial kitchen for those in the food sector that are trying to develop for food products, which we've seen here. So. Couple items I did want to note. Youth entrepreneurship, this is more of a countywide effort. The Daniels Foundation provided funding to the Center for Rural Entrepreneurship to really engage our youth on entrepreneurship. You know, we invest in K-12 education and then we export kids out of our community and they don't ever come back. You know, so that's kind of the low-hanging fruit, the folks that we can recruit back to come to our community. You know, when you're thinking about businesses that are facing such low unemployment, who is most likely to come back? Folks that are already comfortable with the community, know the community. So how can you engage that cohort as well as plant the seed that there are opportunities here for you to start your own business? And that through research that's been done is in the impressionable age in middle school and early high school. And so doing youth entrepreneurship programs is a trend that we're seeing across the country, and the Daniels Fund has invested in doing this. They did a program last summer in Grand County, and I'm fingers crossed hopeful that we can do something here. I've worked with each of the school districts as well as Rob County CEO and Junior Achievement, pulling them together, really trying to be a convener to have this conversation. My hope is that maybe if we can pull this off together as a group, that maybe that can launch into other things and more of a conversation around internships or other items. So we'll see where that goes.
So having, on that subject.
Yeah.
One thing we know for sure is lacking in the community are qualified tradespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about an opportunity for young people to be able to start a business, if they can get a couple of years of trades experience and education, man, there's some opportunity out there. Presuming that the trend of construction continues in the way that it does, that's a business you can start without a college education, I can attest to that.
Right. No, that's true.
And the other thing that's interesting in the construction trades, it's become so much more technical through the years that, you know, it's not just a guy out there with a mortar and bricks
yeah.
building something that really there is a lot of real high-level technical experience that's necessary to be successful in that business
right.
nowadays.
Well, and so and that's part of it is engaging our students, and that was one of the items that I wanted to mention. I worked with Sirocco on their career day. How, you know, what's the future of work? What's that going to look like? And how are we preparing students for that? That you have to be able to have multiple multiple revenue streams. You're going to have a contract maybe that's outside of this county or elsewhere that's bringing in dollars, as well as doing, you know, maybe you're ranching, maybe you're doing, you know, some other jobs, you know, here in the community. Whatever it is, you have to be able to wear five different hats at the same time. And it's not terribly new, but it's just becoming more and more common across you know, with everybody across the sector. So we'll see that. did want to mention the last item here is the Economic Forum. This is with the U.S. Federal Reserve. We'll be doing a small roundtable on May 14th. I've been working with them. Commissioner Melton's going to join that, and then on the morning of May 15th will be a breakfast and larger forum on economic indicators and data from the Fed, which I'm excited about. So our programs here, business retention, experience, and industry clusters, we talked about that, what's happening in the four sectors, four clusters that the EDC has identified and we've been focusing in on. Outdoor products, obviously there's been some action there and some good participation and support with grants through OEDIT that we've advocated for and made connections on, so I'm really happy about that. And I think that OEDIT's been really responsive in this, to our needs there. Having awarded grants and awarding grants for international business development, HALA, for example, participated in ISPO Munich earlier in the year. So that's tremendous help, because that's paying for our companies to attend international business expos to then have new contracts to sell their goods and products elsewhere. And so that means that those companies are able to grow here, hire more people here, and have higher paying wages. Business attraction, I will say it's been a little quiet. So I haven't had a whole lot of folks approaching me. So just a couple, two couples literally from Missouri and one from Tucson. So, but we're kind of more in reactive when it comes to business attraction. I'd love to be doing more proactive business attraction, but obviously that means more resources. Partnership support, wanted to call out certainly the work with the Yampa Valley Entrepreneurship Center in supporting their communications and talking to SCORE about how important the program is here and advocating for that. Marketing communications. Conferences, education that we have coming up. Policies. And then the quality of life items and economic well-being here. Those two items you saw in the Q4 report that I haven't changed. There hasn't been any new reports that have come out. And then the two attachments that I have here, both are the op-ed and then the summary of economic activity here in the Kansas City region for the Fed, which came out on the 17th just this last week. So it's a nice overview of what's going on in the economy. Now, Brandon, questions?
On page 4, under the top, under 2019, what's this first voluntary separation date for employees?
Right, so this is typically, when you're looking at a company like Smartwell or any company that's leaving a community, you've got three options here. It's one, and it's typically in thirds. One third will stay with the company and move with the company. One third will separate from the company and stay in the community. And one third will separate from the company and leave the community. So that's kind of how economic developers typically, when these things happen, typically look at that, all the jobs that are included there in that company. So we can probably expect that, two-thirds would be leaving if that model sticks. I would think that it's a little bit lower than that. My sense of employees there as they're trying, those that are dedicated to staying in this community, plus I think it speaks to the Steamboat and Rapid County and desire to stay here. I think it'll be a little bit higher than that, a third that stay in the community. I think it's maybe even closer to half that are actively out there looking for jobs and trying to find a way to make it work. And so if we're talking about 80 employees, that would probably be 40
around in there that, that stick around.
That's a good thing, because these are probably some talented people you want to see stay in your community.
Exactly. And so that was why our initial, you know, an initial response, you know, to the company was a, you know, we did that morning kind of outreach on a Friday, donuts and coffee, which Vic helped with, of, hey, this community supports you. And we want you to know that as employees, this is an amazing community to stay in. Stay here. You're talented. Find jobs in some of the other companies. You're not going to make as much. But this is a great community, and you're invested in it. So, you know, let's...
Well, maybe someone how to turn into entrepreneurs.
Right. And so I have their HR director, Sarah King. I've had conversations with her of how we can be a bit more organized in feeding current job openings that are happening. You know, not all job openings are posted in the newspaper or elsewhere. You know, it tends to be a lot of who knows who. So how we can feed some of those to her, and for her to disseminate that amongst the employees that
so
have made the decision. Sarah King, she's HR director.
I don't even
Smart
care
Bowl.
Who, but
at Smart
what does she? What does she do then?
HR director at Smart Bowl.
And so the Smart Bowl was amenable to that
after
process.
Once employees have made the decision to stay with the company or voluntarily separate. So those that are voluntarily separating that have made the decision of January 1 or March 1, that's the group. I don't have a number exactly on how many that is, but that's the group that for us, we want to try and help facilitate this process of staying in this community.
Yep.
So this to the August 1st date is when they can say which,
sorry,
what
August
they're 1st. Choosing to
I missed that.
Is
I
that
said
right?
January. It's August 1st.
Okay.
Is the 1st. And then March 1st is
I'm really interested by this one-third, one-third, one-third metric. Mm-hmm. Do we see that, like, for example, when a power plant closes? That's...
This is kind of a rule of thumb amongst economic developers that I've learned as I've been talking to others, is they, you know, that people will say.
And
that.
I assume it's validated.
And you start to think about it, and it's like, okay, I can see that they do.
So I guess I'm just curious because as we have conversations about Hayden, for example,
how can you apply, how could we apply this?
Yeah.
What would that look like?
Right. I mean, are these numbers that you would expect? I know obviously there's nothing set in stone, but that one-third idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it kind of gives us a framework.
It tends to play out in those types of situations as well.
Yeah.
Also on page 4, just a little bit further down under OEdit, item number 4, CCI is Creative Colorado Incorporated.
Colorado Creative Industries.
Okay.
And so that's a division.
Not to be confused with our CCI.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I'm bad at this. I don't always put... I just put in the letters like that.
So. It's all good. That cut my eye, too.
Why are CCI involved?
Yeah.
What kind of progress is the Steamboat Creates organization making, do you think? Or, I mean, what are they... I mean, to be totally blunt, I watch them and I say, what the heck are they doing?
Right.
You know, besides buying signs for Art Walk.
Right. Right. I think, you know,
not that that's not a noble task.
Actually, I had some specific criticisms of those signs, so I
didn't see them. I think it's the larger picture of making a shift that the organization has been focused on the fine arts in the community, and that they took that step of applying for the Creative District designation. That part of the strategy through OEdit and Colorado Creative Industries is when you when arts councils apply for this designation, it forces them to take a good hard look at what they're doing and what their plan is, you know, and how are they, you know, what's their role and what's their position in the community. And so that forced them to come up with plans and look at where they are in the community. And so then they had this the Creative District board entity, and then there was this Arts Council board and entity. And looking at both of them, there was energy in the Creative District, and the Arts Council didn't have as much energy going on. There's so much more vision over here. And so it became very clear that they needed to combine and go more towards what they've developed through the Creative District. And with that is much more an economic development mindset of supporting, you know, those individual business owners to grow. And what does that mean? And this is, I had talked a little bit about this with Vic as well, but conversations around, you know, how, if you're, for example, if you're producing bronzes, right, and you're selling them out here on Main Street, but there's folks that are selling them elsewhere, exporting them across the country and internationally. They're hiring multiple people in this entire effort. And that artist has, and this was interesting because I went on a tour and was able to have a really good conversation with one artist. And she told me, she said, it's the accounting, it's the business side of this, and she doesn't get to do her artwork, she needs support on, she needs help with this. And so if you have Steamboat Creates with this mindset of how do we support them as business owners, they can develop programming that kind of speaks an artist's language when it comes to accounting and business, and or maybe develops identifies specific people that can take on that role for multiple businesses and take that off of the business owner's plate so that they can do what they're good at and somebody else can do that. So that is the direction I see that Steamboat Creates is going. I'm really pleased about that. I'm on their board, and the conversations and the way that they talk about it now is smart and very thoughtful. So I'm happy to see that. I think that it's being, you know, they talk about an umbrella organization. I've talked about this multiple times. I think it's not just that. It's umbrella organization kind of means it overarching. I think it's more being second chair to a lot of other organizations that are out there and helping those organizations fulfill their missions and goals. If it's finding funding and financing and support or whatever it is for them to be good at what they're doing is what it is. So that's how I see it.
How long does their funding from the state continue? And then how does that relate to their timeline in terms of implementing some of this planning that they're doing?
They are, the Creative District has a designation. I think that it's five-year designation, and they have to go in and renew it again. The state is maxed out on those Creative Districts. They're not going to do any more. So then it becomes competitive, and everybody's got out their game and what they're doing and how they're supporting their creative industries. There are various. I think it's probably two or three grants that CCI Creative Industries, CCI has available to the Creative Districts and these boards. Ours has applied for one, which they received, and that's part of this next level of strategic planning that they've been doing. So annual basis as those come up.
Yeah. So. I think it's interesting because I think about the Creative District in Breckenridge, for example,
right. And
it's so obvious and so concrete exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's where it's hard for me to understand how this leads to economic development.
And so that one's interesting, right? Because that was all new, came in, support from the city, and with dedicated funding. This is an organization that's existed from, the early 80s, that has been evolving. And so there is that history that has to be accounted for, and you have to work with everybody to kind of bring everybody along. And obviously that creates some serious rubs that they have to deal with and work out. And that, I think, is part of the strategic planning process, and we've seen tremendous outreach because they're trying to do that. So it's a little bit of a different scenario to be able to move folks along there.
Got it.
So, and they don't have dedicated funding streams. So
makes sense.
That's certainly a plus for the market range. So thoughts on creative industry? Cool.
Vic, do you have updates, or you're just...
No, so I invited Vic this morning. I said, hey, Vic, why don't you come along? So Kara is out of town. She usually comes along and will offer kind of an update on what's going on at the chamber. And Vic falls into the Economic Development Department, and so I'm trying to include him as much as possible on items. So
got it.
I wanted him to come along.
Yes.
See what's going on. So.
Found the time to come.
Thanks.
Be with us. Yeah. It's great to have these conversations.
Absolutely. I don't have any other questions.
I don't either. Yeah. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, and you know, if any of you want to ever have, you know, conversations or meetings or chat about certain items, let me know. I'm always available and willing
so
to do that.
So it'll be interesting when you guys all get back from your NACO thing.
Have some
debriefing with us, and hopefully bring back some pathways to where.
Doug's brimming with enthusiasm.
I don't know. You know, I just think that the public needs to be aware of here.
Absolutely.
What's happening. That's the big thing. So, you know, we shouldn't be sitting around with coffee on our face.
Well, I think this is one of the, I guess this is kind of the tactic that I see here, is that the more, you know, we can go, all of us in this room, we know what's out there and what's available and what, you know, need to do, right? And you go attend an NDAA conference or NACO conference, and it's like, okay, I've heard this before, I know this. I know where to go. I know where there's grants and projects and things. But we need more than just one or two or five people that know, you know. And so expanding that circle and getting other people excited about it and interested and trying to move that, I think, is the biggest opportunity here. You know, to have the superintendent of schools and a city council member, as well as, you know, Hayden Economic Development Commission member, I think that's where it's growing that circle, you know, of people that are invested in it and interested. So that's
well, it's just like your letter about the smart wall thing. You know, for actions, there's unintended reactions, and people need to understand them. So you need to, I mean, that's going to be, that's our big part here, trying to, you know, quantify them and try to deal with the reactions or the unavoidable consequences of what that happens because of somebody else doing something.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, we can all be as proactive as we want to be and do whatever we want to, but there's a hell of a lot of things in our world that are not under our control.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we just have to have the resilience. And then that was the whole thing, and it was the resilience. We didn't want sustainability. It was resilience about how we're going to, you know, survive after all this happens. And so, it's not like we're going to stop the train from going down the track. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think we recognize that, but I think that having that, even that idea of resilience or sustainability, though, there's a lot of folks out there that's totally new to them. You know, so even just that, expanding the base of understanding, I think, is important. There's value in that. So
makes a lot of sense.
Very good.
Cool. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So we are going to take a letter, a look at the letter for the distribution of the payment in lieu funds. Do you have some background information you want to give us? We've talked about this.
These funds have been collected through the subdivision process, mainly for consolidations in Steamboat Lake and Stagecoach. And these are fees that have been paid in lieu of dedication of public sites. And so the state statute, which allows us to collect this money, allows for the distribution of it to school districts. And so this letter is proposed to be sent out to all the school districts in the county announcing that the county has these funds and would like to distribute them. And so it's broken into the four different areas of the county that the fees have been collected for, Stagecoach, Steamboat Lake, Steamboat Springs, and Milner. And so this letter is proposed to be sent to the RE1, 2, and 3 school districts, as well as the North Route Charter School. And so I guess we're looking for some feedback on the content of the letter, and then there are some deadlines for when requests must be received by and when the commissioners will be awarding these funds that need to be filled in as well. So looking for direction on that.
So I think generally the letter looks, makes sense. It's what we talked about, but there's wording in the letter that says, you know, for certain school projects, are there?
I have the same.
Yeah.
Problem.
I think school districts might have a question about what kinds of things can this be used
for. Secondarily, on top of that, we need to include in here that this money needs to go into the capital improvement fund and spent in accordance with the capital improvement fund.
Because it has to be for capital, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and then somewhere in there, there was that legislation that talked about that Eric had brought up to us during our presentation as well. So I think it's, and we don't want to be awarding per project. I mean, hell, let's, you know, desire to need, or it's on the first paragraph. Right.
So your need doesn't need to be specific for a project.
Yeah, do we want to be micromanaging this thing that much? So
well, and I don't know what kind of capital project costs $6,000.
But if we just put in there that it has to be utilized through the capital projects fund concept or something, I think that's going to be suffice. We can. They then will have to run that by their auditor and the rest, and their auditor will have to verify that the funds were then used for the intent that was directed for the capital projects.
Okay.
But if we don't want to get into, like, you know, a conservation easement where we're working on each one of the projects, having a grant process on that. We just, right now, our intention is to be out from underneath this money and give it to somebody else and get it on the ground.
So really, if they said, you know, we're requesting this money for capital improvements, that's pretty much all we need.
Yep. And you know, and I think the other thing, you know, we ought to mention in here as well is that, you know, after award, we would like to see an accounting of how it got spent.
Okay.
Just for our due diligence.
That makes sense.
Responsibilities.
Follow
well.
Up. I think clarifying as well that I would imagine we want their letter of request to indicate how their, I'm trying to think about how to say this, without it being a specific project, but demonstrating that the funding is being used to benefit the area that was where the fees were
generated.
Collected.
Yeah.
Because we've had that discussion, especially about the North Route Charter School that is in the Steamboat Springs School District, but the money really needs to benefit North Route, you know. So I don't know what wording would clarify that. But really, just if the letter said, you know, the school in this area will serve the students of North Route, or
yeah,
something
right.
simple like that.
Okay.
So I guess probably the best bet would be you guys take that concept that we have and roll around. You know, we don't need to schedule another agenda item for it, but, you know, I'd like to see the final draft again to make sure you've got get what we just mentioned to you incorporated into it.
I think let's put it on the consent agenda so that if we do have questions, we have opportunity to follow up.
I'm all right with that. So okay. I guess, do we want to have it signed by you as well?
By the board?
Yeah.
Probably, don't you think?
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts on that, Linnea?
No, I know that Mr. Knaus provided his comments to the letter previously,
right.
And I wasn't aware of any others, although I don't disagree with the comments made today.
Okay. So we probably want him to review it a second time as well, then. With,
yep, I'm
right,
good.
With those modifications.
Okay.
But I would imagine we can put it on a consent
yep.
agenda.
So I think you can send it back to us. If we got any edits or something, send it back to you, and then yeah, let's get it on the consent
sure.
agenda for that design.
I guess the only other question is, do we need to agree on a timeline? I noted there were some blanks about when these funds are going to be awarded, et cetera. Are we thinking that Chad just decides that, or do we need to have a discussion about
Well, I think
a
we
timeline?
Probably, as soon as you know, we can fill those in as we go, but
yeah.
we need to have a month for them to think about it.
Yeah.
And then we need to have a month to get it back on our agenda to be awarding.
So probably whenever it actually
whenever
goes
it comes,
out.
Then we'll add two months
out.
To it. Yeah, a month and a month.
That's fine by me.
Does that sound
yep.
like an idea?
Sounds good. So okay. received a month after the letter goes out.
Right.
And then awarding the funds a month later.
Yeah. But I do think we need to make sure that we get in there that it's go to the capital improvement fund and only eligible capital improvements. Let them decide if they're eligible or not. We don't need to micromanage and decide if their concept of capital is, but we do need to let them know that it needs to be spent.
That's where
on capital.
It needs to go. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if we need a motion on that. What do you think, Doug?
No, we're all right.
Just direction? And
yeah.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Sounds good. Thanks, Linnea.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the second item's not scheduled till 1:30.
Right.
And I feel like if we start it right now, we're going to be done before 1:30, so... As much as I hate to take a 20-minute break.
Wait, Jim's not going to come back or no?
He's not coming back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's done.
Okay.
So he's headed to Arizona.
So we are reviewing the potential adoption of the 2019 housekeeping amendment.
Yes. So you all last saw this at the joint meeting on March 7th, where there were five items recommended for changes, proposed changes to the regulations through our routine housekeeping discussions. And at our April 4th Planning Commission adoption hearing, four of those five were recommended to you all for approval, and we will go through what those are, which are on the attached Exhibit A to your packet in a redline draft form so you can see what the changes were. The one item that was pulled off had to do with occupied trailers on construction sites. And Planning Commission wanted directed staff for additional research, mainly surrounding including setbacks for trailers, limiting the number of trailers allowed on site, as well as a time frame of the permit. So they did not recommend this to move forward at this time. So they would like to see it again, and we will reschedule after we do that research. So up on the screen... are the items that you previously saw with the recommendations that you had provided at the joint discussion, and then it was fine-tuned by Planning Commission. So what you see up on the screen and in your packet is what is recommended for adoption. Alan, I think you have the first.
So we'll start with the value-added agricultural processing. And this amendment is to allow for the processing of poultry that is in compliance with the state law allowing processing of poultry. And so just to be clear, the value-added ag processing regulations are not specific to the processing of poultry. That's just what this amendment is addressing. But it includes the making of jams and jellies, crackers, fiber products, candles, cheese, stuff like that. So it's a very general set of regulations meant to address a bunch of different types of operations. So at the joint hearing, the bulk of the conversation centered around the birds being raised on site. And so staff got in touch with CDPHE to get more clarity on this issue. And they said that the birds do not have to be raised on site. They just have to be raised by the producer that is processing them. So they could raise the birds on a leased parcel or another parcel of land, bring it onto their parcel and process them there. And as long as they're the ones that are raising the birds, then that is in compliance with state law. And so after got clarity on that, it was staff's opinion and Planning Commission agreed that no changes to the regulations needed to be made to address that because there's already the line item that addresses percentage of product grown on site. And so there were no changes made because of that. There was an additional standard added to Section 8.25 that requires the birds to be raised by the producer. And then some other changes that were made were just kind of clerical in nature, and that was changing the word operation throughout these regulations to facility, because some poultry processors don't use an actual facility. It's done open air, and I'm sure other operations have open air processing areas. So facility was changed to operation, and then the thresholds which determine what level of review the application goes through. In the current regulations, it says requirements. They're actually thresholds. So we changed the word requirement to thresholds. And that's it. Those are all the changes for the value-added ag.
So the question about the line in the chart that says percentage of product grown on site,
mm-hmm.
I guess I'm asking this question. Does that create some confusion? And I understand how that applies to all these other products that you're talking about, but when we're talking about poultry specifically, does having that section, I guess two things. One, are we saying, for example, for the small scale operation, that more than 75% of the poultry has to be raised or grown on site, or is that not true?
No, that would remain true.
So that is true.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the other 25% would just have to be raised by them, but wouldn't have to be raised on site. Is that what?
Correct.
Is that what that means?
Okay. And so on site, it's on the site of where they're being processed.
Right. I understand.
Okay.
And so that's a local requirement, and that's not based on the state statute?
Correct.
Okay, got it. And we are expanding that to include poultry.
Correct.
Okay, got it. So I guess it doesn't create confusion. Now I understand.
Okay.
No, it all creates confusion.
No, sounds good.
You're confused.
I'm glad I'm not the only one confused.
Yes. We're all confused here. So sometimes more than others. So what happens if you're above these things? Do we allow any of that? So what happens with that?
What do you mean above these things?
If you're above the numbers, the quality. Because this is a threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lesser burden if you don't go up to that threshold. What happens if you have more than that threshold? Do we have a permitting process for somebody else?
Then it would just kick you into a higher level of review.
That's what I thought. So
yeah.
So it would kick us into a SUP or into a CUP.
Yeah.
So this is an enabling for a lesser review and a lesser concept for, quote unquote, the family farm.
If you're a smaller operation.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And again, we're just trying to put some bookends around it so we can kind of figure out what that is.
I'm
fine with this. And again, I guess, and again, if they're not in, I guess somebody would channel themselves into being this way to try and not be within a special use permit. If they want to do bigger than that, they're going to be big enough to be able to go through the special use permit process.
Yeah.
Right.
So which of the, when I look at the regulations, like under A, for example, 1, 2, 3, and 4, if they are above, maybe this is what Doug just asked, and I'm just asking a different way. If they're above one of those, they have to get kicked up to the next category. Is that true?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it. So if they have 50% of their poultry being raised somewhere else,
Then it's automatically at least a medium processing operation requires CUP.
Okay.
And then depending on how they fall into the land acreage, the vehicle trips per day, size of the facility, if they're using one, then it would determine whether they stay as a CUP or if they go into a special use permit.
Okay. That makes sense. An agricultural, the processing of an agricultural product doesn't fall under this category if it's generating more than 50 vehicle trips per day. Is that like just across the board?
Wait, say that again.
So I'm looking at traffic generation. Sorry, this is the first time I've looked at this regulation, so I'm sure these are things not just related to chickens, but traffic generation, the sale, blah, 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 is less than 50 vehicle trips per day, and that it says less than 50 in all of these. So if it generates more than that,
well,
they
actually,
can't. Oh, sorry, large just to 50.
More than 50.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
A lot of things here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have any questions about
so,
that.
So you go through all of the small process. Small processing operation, medium processing operation, and the large agriculture processing operation. And then you come up with the standards for value-added agriculture processing. So what is that?
So those are, I mean, these are just the general guidelines that any operation would have to comply with. So hours of operation, shall not be classified as a hazardous waste generator, other permits and laws, so things like that. Things that are meant to reduce or contain the level of impacts associated with the operation.
So and all of those apply to all the levels?
Correct.
And that's not changing.
So then how come we have one I then that's been added, all poultry process must be raised by the processor?
By the producer, because that is one of the requirements under state law to be able to qualify as a under this exemption. Under this exemption, the exemption to
be exempt from this.
From
Cal
the inspection,
Department of Agriculture's inspection criteria.
Just is hazardous waste generator a technical term? I mean, is there a, you say under state or federal regulations? I guess I'm just questioning the processing of poultry. Is there a threshold for at what point when you're processing meat that there's hazardous waste being generated?
I know I asked Todd about that, and he said that if it's hazardous waste, it can't go in the landfill. But Brothers and all the processing facilities in Craig that are inspected and licensed, they just send everything to the Moffat County landfill. Hmm. So based on that, I do not think that So I don't think it would be considered
stuff
hazardous.
From the chickens itself. Yeah.
It doesn't
hazardous.
Count as hazardous. Okay.
But they could have some other stuff.
Processing.
That they're,
okay.
So
I guess just one of the things that was discussed a lot with the Planning Commission is, let's say someone's processing 1,000 birds a year, what kind of impacts are potentially generated by that? So I just, but obviously we would talk about that through the
permit. Yeah, and through the process we would send referrals to Environmental Health, the Extension office, and get their feedback on that. And if it's for poultry, we would send it to CDPHE as well, who ensures that they're in compliance with state law, and we could specifically ask about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm good.
Yep.
So I guess the other thing is, we do have two public here. I don't know whether they want, and are we going to make a motion on each of these, or as I conveniently say, we just give you a blink and a nod, and we're good to go.
So planning, here is one motion.
That's,
so if we want to pull any of this out, we might do separate,
right.
do separate
okay.
motions.
I'm
but,
good. I just want to know the process. So I don't know.
Paul, do you have a specific item you'd like to make a comment on?
I just had a question. I didn't understand the 75-25. I mean, if the state will let you do as many birds as you can and raise them on your and process them on your facility, why are we limiting someone to have 25% of the birds off site? I mean, it doesn't necessarily make sense to me. I'm not sure I really care.
So not only could it be off site, but it could still be owned by that flock owner.
Yeah, but
they'd just not be on the same property.
Yeah, but according to this, it seems like you have to raise and process the birds, 75% of your birds on the site you're processing.
To qualify.
If you have another site and you want to raise the birds there and bring them over to process them on a site.
Then you just have to apply for one of the higher, category.
You can.
So if more than 50% are raised on site, then you could apply for medium. If less than 50%, you could apply under the large category. It's just the level of permitting that's required. It's not the
So you don't have to have them on the processing site. That's
correct.
Where I was confused. It sounded like you had to raise them all on your site. Okay.
Nope, it's just the level of permit.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we're going to go through the rest of these, but if there's any that I don't know if you're here to make a specific comment. Okay, thank you. All right, let's talk about signs. Structures.
Hopefully this one's pretty straightforward. But we discussed the definition of structure, and Planning Commission recommended approval of including paver patios and on-grade patio or decking in the list of features that would be exempt from setback requirements. So this was the paver patios was the consensus at the joint discussion, and then at Planning Commission, they added on-grade patio or decking as well.
What is on-grade patio or decking?
It means it's not elevated.
Right.
But so is it, I mean, you literally could build a wooden deck that sits on the ground?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, and
right.
You could build it all the way up to the road.
And it would be on-grade versus if it's 30 inches. So if it's raised, then it would have to meet setbacks. And most decking is, but there's paver patios, there's like a concrete patio,
right?
Would be able to be within setbacks.
Makes sense. And there's no limit in here about the square footage of these?
So then we have our small structure definition,
okay.
Which takes care of anything over or anything less than 120 square feet would be under our small structure definition.
So if someone built, is there a maximum size of on-grade patio or decking or paper patios?
There
isn't. So it would be any size?
Mm-hmm. And we brought that up with Planning Commission. They didn't seem to have an issue with it.
Do we see people building these things in the setback often?
It comes up.
Okay.
You know, it comes up often enough that we brought it to you all.
Yeah, I think it's all right. And, you know, I guess they need to understand that if somebody needs to get through the setback, the easement, it's going to have come up.
Yep. And so really the justification is that these are typically fairly temporary kinds of structures.
Yes.
And,
right.
So the other items in the list that we talked about were like raised garden beds, small retaining walls, less than 4 feet, culverts, ranch entryways, mailboxes, things like that.
Okay.
And I know it seems kind of silly to be like, paver patio? Why are we having this discussion? But based on the definition, it can't be in the setback.
It's not silly. I'm fine.
I'm fine. I'm good, too.
Okay. So let's talk about signs.
Signs. Okay. So this was to clarify the conflict on signs in the right-of-way. And so just to go in order of the changes that are proposed. So item C under applicability stated that no signs are permitted in the county right-of-way unless a permit is obtained. And no, any sign not permitted in the county right-of-way may be removed by the county at any time. It's staff's opinion that it's in the wrong section of the regulations. The applicability section is our standards that say when these regulations apply to a sign. And so this statement C is more of a locational standard instead of an applicability standard. So staff and recommended moving it, and Planning Commission agreed to section B under general standards, which address location. And then in section 5.93 under exemptions, staff thinks that, or is of the opinion that the general standards for location, height, sign area, computation of sign area apply to exemptions. And so we added a statement in there to make it clear that those general standards apply to exempted signs. But some exempted signs do have specific requirements on location and size. So unless there is a specific statement in that exemption, the general standards apply. And then under ranch signs, added the statement that they must be located on the same property or access easement to which the sign relates. And then we've already gone over the location. So there's the standard that detached signs shall not be located closer than 5 feet from every boundary line or 15 feet from the public road right-of-way, unless approved by Rock County Public Works. And that unless approved by Rock County Public Works was added so that there is some flexibility, and any sign located near or in the right-of-way needs to be approved by them. And then one addition that Planning Commission requested that was not discussed at the joint hearing was a wattage restriction for LEDs. There is a wattage restriction for incandescent and fluorescent lights. And so staff did the research to see if there was an equivalent wattage for LEDs from fluorescent, from incandescent, and there is not a standard wattage conversion. So we did a little bit more research and found out that it was way more in depth in scope than what staff had intended to address these housekeeping changes. So even though Planning Commission recommended that change, staff is recommending that the board approve the changes without that suggested change. And if we need to address that in the future, then we can. Because when you get into lighting for signs, it's
it can get very technical and very complicated. And it was, like I said, beyond the scope that we had intended for these changes.
Seems fine to me.
I guess questions? I'm a little confused. So what did they want to change on the lighting? I mean, you still have Section G here with the lighting.
So in Section G, fluorescent lights, incandescent lights, and gas-fired lights are specifically mentioned.
Yeah.
They wanted to add a D for LEDs and add a wattage restriction in for LEDs. But like I said, there's no good wattage conversion from fluorescent or incandescent to LED, so it made it almost impossible to find.
Yeah, but even then, that's only talking about the signs illuminated from an interior light source. Mm-hmm. That means the lights are inside of the sign,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yep. Yeah. So we're just talking about the general brightness of the sign.
Mm-hmm. Of the sign itself after it's been lit by its lights.
Correct.
Yeah, that sounds pretty high standard there on the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be on my ranch sign, I'll tell you that.
You're not going to like the ranch sign with LEDs.
It's not solar powered. I'll get my green lighting out. Come on, just at night.
Unless we have some reason to think that they're, I mean, an interior lighted sign, I imagine, comes that way in some, like, this is not people just building signs with Christmas
lights,
right?
They do too.
I mean, but there's still, unless we have a restriction, anybody, you can go really as bright as you want.
Long as you're lighting it with LEDs.
As long
Correct.
As, yeah.
Yeah.
How many internally lit signs do we have out there? I don't think any.
Yeah.
Not on the county.
I'm good.
About it. Yeah, I'm fine with that, too. The attorney opinion?
I think that's pretty self-explanatory there, so... Eric will be happy now.
Just a typo.
Yes.
Cleaning up a typo.
Yes, exactly. So those are the items that the Planning Commission recommended for approval.
So I know the other one was talking about the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, can someone clarify for me what qualifies as a housekeeping amendment versus actually amending the regulations? I mean, because part of it... to me on that one is it doesn't seem like housekeeping. It seems like it's adding some rules in a way that is different than just the kind of cleanup that we're talking about. So I guess I just don't know what the category of housekeeping amendments really is.
It's basically what you just
right.
described.
Exactly.
It's the cleanup,
yeah.
And we agree that it is.
It's a bigger discussion.
Outside
yeah.
the scope of housekeeping.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons we did take it off.
Okay. That makes sense to me, and I support that idea. Do you have anything else, Doug?
No, I'm just trying to find the motion here. Where's the motion at then? I guess I'm getting that. Hang on.
Section 2 on page 1. I know y'all probably have a different page numbering.
Go here to B.
Yeah.
There you go. It's just adopt the housekeeping amendments as shown in Exhibit A is what the motion says, but I don't know. Oh, are we looking for the from the planning minutes?
Well, I was heading there too, but
it's all good.
I'm good. Hang on, I'm just coming.
Got all day.
So, Madam Chair, I move that we approve and adopt the 2019 housekeeping amendments that were presented regarding the PL 19-100.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's it.
Very good.
Okay. Great. Meeting adjourned. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.